Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. If you love digging into the week's political headlines, subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our reporters take you behind the scenes of some of the biggest stories from the campaign trail to the halls of Congress. Just for our Inside the Hive listeners, save 15% on a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair with promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off 1 year of all you can read, watch, and hear. Vanity Fair.
Dan, this Donald Trump hush money trial was supposed to start March 25th. Now it's off until at least the middle of April. Is it ever going to happen?
This was the trial that seemed to be firm, that seemed to have a firm start date and was really coming up. And now it's not. It was delayed at least until April, and we'll find out Monday if that, in fact, is the extent of the delay or if there's even more of a delay.
That is Dan Adler, a staff writer for Vanity Fair, who is going to be covering the Manhattan DA's trial of Trump if and when it happens. And I'm Brian Stelter. Welcome to Inside the Hive. This week, we are going deep inside the many criminal charges against Trump and the long wait for a real live courtroom trial. To talk about it, we're also joined by Vanity Fair politics correspondent Bess Levin. Bess, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Are you getting impatient like I am?
Yes. Oh, my God. Every single day, it's like, when the hell are these cases going to happen? And it seems depressingly, you know, I feel like I'm an optimistic person, but I'm getting less optimistic that these cases are going to happen in a timely manner. And by timely, I mean before the election.
November is getting closer every day. Look, everybody listening to this podcast knows there are four pending criminal trials, including charges for trying to overturn the 2020 election. But as the old saying goes, the wheels of justice turn slowly.
Yes,
you recently wrote about what you called, quote, Trump's multi-decade streak of never being held accountable for anything. So let's go back in time a bit. How's he been able to pull that off until now?
Before he was president, he had never been criminally charged, but there were a lot of lawsuits. There were investigations, and he, over many decades, honed a strategy, a legal strategy of delay, 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 appeals, and, you know, other ways that you can drag, that you can run out the clock. So even if he wasn't necessarily going to win on the merits, you know, sometimes he would drag things out so long that, you know, prosecutors would leave and judges would leave. And it has helped him historically. He's had a few moments of semi-accountability. You know, there was Trump University and that got shut down. But largely, he's been able to escape consequences his entire life. And he's using the same strategy now for these four cases.
For these criminal cases.
Yeah.
One of the only exceptions to your accurate rule is, of course, the E. Jean Carroll case. And Dan,
yes,
you were in the courtroom for this case, a federal jury ruling last year in a civil trial that Trump was liable for sexual assault. What did that feel like in the courtroom? I mean, that was a moment of actual accountability.
Yeah, to Bess's point, there are so many allegations and cases, and they all seem to dissipate at one point or another. And this was a moment where there was something clarifying and crystallizing about it. It certainly didn't derail the phenomenon of Donald Trump in any permanent or perhaps even lasting way.
But not in the primaries. No, not in
right,
the primaries.
Right, right, right. But I think there was some important value in the sense that this kind of accountability was possible.
That the courts work.
Yes.
That the courts can work. Just 2 weeks ago, he had to post a $91.6 million bond for the defamation judgment in the Carroll case. You know, so it was the sexual assault finding. It was also the defamation finding, the follow-up that was extraordinary.
That was the explosive judgment amount.
And Bess, we've read about him having a hard time finding the money in the civil fraud case.
Yeah, I mean, his lawyers just said this week that he has approached dozens of companies to put up the bond in the civil fraud case where the penalties with interest are over $400 million. Everyone has either said no outright or they won't accept real estate as collateral, which obviously for Trump is a big problem. And he doesn't have the cash to do it. They would take cash, but he doesn't have enough. So we're going to have to see what going to happen with that. It is possible. So the deadline is Monday, and Monday, Letitia James, well, she could literally start seizing assets. Whether she does, we have to see. But in that case, consequences could be coming. Mm. Not criminal, but financial.
What do you think this feels like for Donald Trump right now? Being on the hook for all these hundreds of millions and having his entire identity as a rich, untouchable guy be challenged.
I assume it's devastating. You know, he's talked about being rich his entire life. And I think the last time he put a number on it, which was several years ago, he claimed to be worth close to $9 billion, which is obviously not true. And so I think this really is psychologically difficult for him, specifically in terms of piercing the veil of him as this extremely, extremely mind-bogglingly wealthy person. And I think, you know, he's also upset for many other reasons. And he not surprisingly has lashed out at the courts over this amount of money that they've said he has to pay and he can't. And I think I don't think he's happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, Trump says it's too much money. Has there ever been a judgment like this before? Of course, that's not true. And Letitia James has said you can go out and get multiple bonds, smaller bonds. There's ways to handle this. But you've got to imagine there's a part of her or part of within her office. There's a thrill, maybe. There's a very personal feeling about taking on Trump and winning like this.
Yeah, and I also wanted to say along these lines in the upcoming Manhattan case that it's a sordid affair. It's a tabloid story. It's about a porn star. It's about alleged hush money payments. It's not anything approaching presidential, right? It doesn't have an air of gravitas or importance. It's embarrassing for him.
It is embarrassing. Yeah, it is embarrassing. Let's go through all four criminal trials. You're going to be covering the hush money case in New York, as I said, if and when that trial begins. But let's look at the other three as well. The classified documents case in Florida, Bess, there's been some movement recently. Judge Eileen Cannon, a Trump appointee, has been responding to Trump's efforts to get the case thrown out. There's a lot of skepticism, though, a lot of maybe even cynicism about Cannon and whether she's helping Trump slow walk this.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of concern around Cannon. Early on, there were some calls she made that people said were absolutely ridiculous. Most recently, last week, she did reject his attempt to have the case thrown out on saying, you know, the use of the Espionage Act was too vague. So, you know, that's I guess, a small win for justice. But I don't think we should be celebrating just yet that this case is going to happen in a timely manner. And then, you know, you have the federal election case, which the Supreme Court did Trump a big solid by saying that they will hear his claims of immunity. So even if they say you're not immune, you can and will be prosecuted. They're not even hearing those arguments until April 25th. And we might not get an answer from them until the summer, which means that case at best, might not start till the fall. Mm. So that's very depressing. And then the Georgia case, which I don't think anyone thought that was ever going to start before the election because it's this sprawling RICO case. They obviously tried to get it thrown out with the Fannie Willis allegations with the boyfriend and everything like that. And while they were unsuccessful, Fannie Willis is still on the case, although the prosecutor resigned. That was another delay tactic that delayed things for at least a month, I think it was. So that's where those other cases stand.
There is an argument that bringing the charges mattered or matters more than the trial and a possible conviction. Let me play MSNBC's Jen Psaki sort of making that argument, saying, we all know what he did. The evidence is in public. Here's what she said about the charges themselves.
We all know what he did. There's no doubt about the basic facts in any of these cases, really. Like, we watched the insurrection he incited in the U.S. Capitol unfold on television. We saw the photos of the boxes of classified documents in his bathroom. We heard the tape of him on the phone asking the Georgia Secretary of State to find him votes. Even Trump's claim of presidential immunity tells us that he has no interest in disputing the facts. That's not his argument. It's never been, I didn't do it. It's always been, I did it and I was allowed to. That's his argument. So while the American people deserve trials before election day, of course they do, we shouldn't need them in any of these cases to know what he did and to know the danger he poses to democracy and to our rights.
Bess, is she right?
I think she's right, but she is operating under, you know, within the realm of reasonable people who believe the things that they see with their own eyes.
She lives on Earth One, and you're worried about Earth Two.
You could make the argument, you know, you could make the argument that, yeah, it's great that these charges came, but we shouldn't even need the charges. We saw the insurrection happen. And so, you know, I think the problem is with people who continue to support Trump that it doesn't matter to them that these charges have happened. It's, in fact, in some ways, for some people, it's made them like him more because he is being unjustly persecuted. And so I agree with her thesis, but I think it gives too much credit to some people who, you know, should have realized that he's bad news before the charges came.
With swing voters, though, with independents, these charges and these potential trials and these possible convictions could really matter. There's polling that speaks of the power of these charges. Let me get into that after a quick break here on Inside the Hive.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. I'm Brian Stelter here at Vanity Fair's offices with Dan Adler, who was going to be at the courthouse next week in Lower Manhattan for the Hush Money case. Of course, as you said, Dan, that's been delayed until at least mid-April, maybe even longer. So tell us first why the sudden surprise delay, and then we should unpack what the case really means.
There is a batch of records related to a federal investigation along the same lines as the current Manhattan case. And, you know, there are different accounts from the defense team and the prosecutors as to why those records suddenly emerged at this late juncture. But those records, we've been made to understand, will affect whatever happens during an eventual theoretical trial. So the judge has taken the opportunity to assess what's in those records and assess what amount of time is needed to see what impact they could have on the trial.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that everybody can be treated fairly, even though Trump will always claim that he was never treated fairly in any of these cases. So take us back to 2016. What is the Hush Money case?
2016, which feels like a very, very long time ago now, there was the Access Hollywood tape. And again, that feels sort of like an ancient artifact. But at the time, it was, of course, a really big deal. And it painted Trump in a really damning light. So what prosecutors allege is that in the wake of the release of that tape, Trump being concerned about similar stories about his sex life becoming public, orchestrated a scheme to preclude the possibility of someone like Stormy Daniels telling the story of her alleged affair with Trump.
And this is not new information in 2024. This was revealed partly through the Wall Street Journal within a couple of years of the payoff.
Yeah, there were a couple of investigations, one being in the Manhattan DA's office that was ultimately not pursued. And then he was an important Trump world figure and sort of he captured a lot of the Trump New York essence. And then he went away. He went to prison. He got out during the pandemic. And then, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, there's that guy. and there are all these other guys, and we're talking about them again. So yeah, I had to do a little bit of refresh myself, both because it is, you know, several years ago at this point, and again, also because there are a million other Trump world figures that have emerged since Michael Cohen.
Right, right. It really is from an earlier season. Michael Cohen was spotted at the Manhattan DA's office, I think it was last week, for a prep session ahead of the trial. So we'll expect to see him. There's also been a report about Stormy Daniels testifying, that the judge has denied Trump's bid to stop her from being able to take the stand.
Yeah, and I should say the judge also denied the Access Hollywood tape itself will not be admitted as evidence, but lawyers can talk about the contents of that tape.
Okay. Bess, let's imagine for a moment if it is the end of April or May and this trial does get underway. There will not be cameras in the courtroom, so we're not going to be able to watch this live on cable all day. But, you know, we're going to have reporters like Dan and others running out, telling us what happens, transcribing. Yeah. You know, we'll see those, you know, courtroom illustrations. What's it going to mean for the country, for our campaign? We're now in a general election campaign between Trump and Biden. To have Stormy Daniels potentially on the stand testifying about sleeping with Donald Trump and then being afraid, she says in this new Peacock documentary, she was afraid for her life that, you know, Trump was going to have her killed or something.
Just wanted to stand up for myself. You never saw my name that didn't say porn star in front of it because we're not considered human. I won't give up because I'm telling the truth.
So what's that going to mean for the country and our election if this trial does happen this spring?
I mean, you would hope that it would mean that people would say, I don't think this guy's presidential material the second time around. But, you know, people thought the same thing when the Access Hollywood tape came out. There was an initial, he's finished. You can't talk about grabbing women, et cetera, and be president. And we all know what happened there.
And that was a reaction. Can I just say that was a reaction within his campaign, within his party?
They didn't think he was going to win.
That's what I always try to remind people about, because I was sitting on set at CNN that night when we were waiting. What is Trump going to say? Is he going to bow out? How's he going to handle this, right? You had Republicans around Trump saying, it's over. It wasn't just the liberal media that viewed it as a big deal. Mike Pence viewed it as a big deal. And and yet, you know, I know that feels like ancient history now. Dan, as you said, there's so much we've forgotten.
So much. Yeah.
It's Trump in the news on a daily basis, again, in a way that I would imagine he finds embarrassing. Because, because again, it involves this sordid tabloid material. And I mean, I suppose the flip side of that is, you know, he's proven pretty effective at turning these kinds of criminal prosecutions into fodder for himself as sort of a persecuted figure. So you could see it working both ways, as something that is distracting from what he would like to promote about himself, or in fact, enhancing that.
I did hear someone on Fox recently suggesting that being reminded about Trump and the sex scandals makes him out to be virile. I don't think that's the word they used, but it basically made the argument he's a big, tough, strong guy. He's a man's man as compared to weak President Biden.
I definitely think that there is a contingent of the population that will see it that way.
Yeah, we're going to hear that narrative. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yes, I agree with Dan that like this is embarrassing for him, but I fully believe that there are certain, you know, they, oh, yeah, look at this hotshot. He allegedly had sex with a porn star. That's really cool. You know, like I think that there are people for whom this will only burnish his reputation.
Right. Ooh,
I felt a little chill down my spine just now.
Yeah. And you know, it is to that point, it is true that this all stems from a celebrity golf tournament in 2006, which, you know, is very like that's the ground we're on, this sort of like celebrity self-serving image making. So there is a sense, I suppose, in which,
sorry, are you trying to suggest that the Trump couldn't land Stormy Daniels now 20 years later? Are you trying to date him and suggests he's too old now.
Well, there's another affair related to this case with Karen McDougal, or another alleged affair.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, again, this is very much the territory we're in. Trump as either, you know, embarrassing, unfaithful man, or maybe to another person as virile, prolific man.
Can you imagine hooking up with somebody and like 20 years later, you're on trial because you tried to pay her off? I mean, again, I know he denies everything, but just try to imagine this.
Yeah.
2006. Yeah. I'm trying to think about what I was doing in 2006.
Yeah. And one thing about Stormy, too, is she is she's proven herself to be a very, I think, canny and adept narrator of these circumstances. Between the documentary, the way she's on Twitter, I think she understands the cultural waters that she finds herself in.
That's a great point. To have this documentary come out right on the what was going to be the, you know, the eve of the trial, and as I said, right, streaming on Peacock.
I'd love to know, Dan, what the sort of thoughts are. Like, are people worried that Michael Cohen, it's going to be easy to discredit him because of him being him and it being at all the things he admitted to and that he's, you know, an ex-con?
Yeah, that as you'd probably expect, that keeps coming up in court filings where Trump's team tries to cast doubt upon him. The arguments from the government are A, that he's been consistent about this particular story since he's come clean about it, and B, oftentimes you have witnesses who have admitted to criminal conduct in the past. So they say, right, you know, you say one thing now, and you've been saying that thing for a while. It doesn't really matter if at some other point in your life you did something unsavory.
Mm. Right.
Of course, Donald Trump says there's no crime here. There's no case. Let's unpack his defense in just a moment.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarcella.
Putting bad guys away. There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarcella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarcella.
We gotta show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden. Listen to new episodes of The Burden starting March 19th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. I'm Brian Seltzer, talking with Dan Adler and Bess Levin. We're talking about Donald Trump and all the looming trials, including the hush money case here in Manhattan. Here is Trump sitting outside the Manhattan courtroom at one point talking about the pending case and saying there's no crime at all.
Everything that I've heard and read, even from legal scholars, said there's absolutely no case here. It's not a crime. This is not a crime. And when you look at what's going on outside on the streets, where violent crime is at an all-time high, I think it's a very, very, it's a great double standard. The other thing, this case could have been brought 3 years ago. There is no case. They decided not to bring it. The district attorney Bragg didn't want to bring it. He said he doesn't want to bring this case. But it's not a crime. We're here for something that is not a crime. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. What it is election interference. It's being run by Joe Biden's White House. His top person was placed here in order to make sure everything goes right. This is a terrible time for our country. This is a real dark period for our country.
All right. Number one, this case is not being run by the Biden White House. Number two, Manhattan is not the hellscape that Donald Trump pretends it is. He knows better. And number three, this is a terrible time for the country. He's right, Bess. Here's what Politico wrote this. Quote, for the first 234 years of the nation's history, no American president or former president had ever been indicted. But now I've got a guy indicted four times.
Right.
This actually is a terrible time for the United States. And as we've talked about on this podcast before, in democracies, having legal processes to hold politicians accountable is normal and healthy and common. And not just in the United States. You know, yes, it's never happened to an American president or ex-president, but it happens to governors, it's happened to mayors. This is normal. This is how it's supposed to work. But I want to make one more point about that Trump video. He is going to be out there selling his side of the story, so to speak, playing for the cameras, while the actual trial, when and if it happens, will not be televised. So in an interesting way, he kind of may have an advantage in the public realm.
Yeah, and he's been doing that all throughout from, you know, Alvin Bragg, Manhattan's first black DA. He has said from the jump that this is a racist attack on him, and everything that you would expect has really gone on the offensive as far as portraying this as, you know, as you said, something that was sort of like puppeteered from on high, which, you know, just of course, you know, needless to say, it doesn't pass the smell tests, but is very compelling to a certain kind of person.
It's sort of funny to imagine Joe Biden in the White House, like trying to pull the strings and come up with what's the next charge against Donald Trump? Like as if the world actually works that way when we know it doesn't.
Right. And those are the, you know, one day it's Joe Biden has dementia and he, you know, can't put his own pants on. And then another day that he is orchestrating all of these prosecutions himself.
Bingo.
In the dark shadows.
The dictator with dementia. That is the Republican framing of Joe Biden. But look, Bess, talking about the campaign, talking about the election cycle here, let's say that the hush money trial does happen this spring. It seems the other trials are delayed. Am I right to say it's possible the federal election case, the January 6th case, could begin in the fall? But we don't know for sure?
I think at best, the federal election case could begin in the fall. If it does, I think it would be extremely unlikely that it would be over by the time of the election.
Right, so no verdict. Right.
I don't think we would have a verdict in that before the election, and certainly not a decision, and certainly not a potential sentence. And of course, you know, in that case, if he manages to win the election and get into the White House, it's, you know, it's game over for the federal cases.
Yes, it would be. Well, I mentioned earlier polling on this subject. We know that the MAGA base is with Trump. We've learned that through the primary season. I mentioned earlier what the polls show about the impact of a possible conviction. It's been striking, best to go through this primary season and see Donald Trump so thoroughly consolidate his support among Republican primary voters. Relatively small crowd, but, you know, he's had more than 10 million votes so far in the primaries. Nikki Haley's had about 3 million. So that there is this anti-Trump contingent in the GOP. They do exist. But we also know it's his party. His party likely not to be swayed by a conviction. But here's a really striking Politico Ipsos poll finding recently, quote, more than a third of independents said a guilty verdict would make them less likely to support Trump's candidacy. In a close race, that might matter. And this also gets to some of the surveys we've seen during primaries showing some Trump supporters saying they would rethink voting for him if he were convicted. And I've been skeptical of that because I figure, you know, come November, people come home. But I think it's interesting to picture what independents might do, what actual swing voters might do if Trump is convicted.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. Yes, in the case of independents, I come back to the idea of you have a person like Mike Pence who, yes, he's not an independent. He is a Republican. But, you know, you could quote unquote say he's a more sane Republican than Trump, obviously. And Trump almost got him killed. And he has come out and said, I won't endorse him. But he hasn't said, I won't vote for him.
That is true.
Stuff like that scares me. Nikki Haley has said, you know, she hammered Trump and I think she's unlikely to endorse him because that would just be so embarrassing for her. But she always manages to leave the door open. There was a Wall Street Journal interview before she dropped out and she said, I have major concerns about Trump. I have more concerns about Joe Biden.
Oh, yeah.
That worries me. Thoughts like that.
Here are two other findings from that poll. Dan, it says half the country believes Trump is guilty in the Manhattan prosecution. 50%, literally a 50-50 split. Now, of course, that means most Democrats believe he's guilty. Most Republicans think he's innocent. You know, it all comes down to polarized politics. Let's be honest. A lot of people in this poll have not looked at the evidence in the Hush Money case, right? That, you know, they think they know whether he's guilty or not already.
Yeah, along those lines, for the purposes of this case, I think it is worth noting we're in Manhattan.
It would be a Manhattan jury.
Yes. So if you think about which side of the 50-50 we're talking about, you could probably make some inferences.
It's been pointed out that the jury pool is quote unquote bad for Trump in Manhattan, but even worse, so to speak, in Washington. And this gets to the federal trial, the January 6th trial. We were talking about Bess. The other finding from the political polling I wanted to note was, quote, a large majority still wants Trump to stand trial in Washington before November, meaning it's not just Democrats or anti-Trump folks who want to see this trial happen on the January 6th charges, on the charges right. of trying to overthrow the Republicans want it, too. People want to see this settled one way or
yes.
another.
Yeah. Yeah. I assume that there are among the Republicans who want to have this case happen before the election. I assume there are some who say, let's get him exonerated before the election. But yes, I do believe for whatever the various reasons are, whether you want to see him go to jail, you want to see him exonerated, you're just so sick and tired of this. A lot of people would like these trials to happen and then to never hear about them again.
And never hear about them again. Dan, what could be the lasting impact on our justice system if Trump gets off again or if he's convicted?
I think there is a sense, both because of what Bess talked about, the reputation of Teflon Don and all of that. If he gets off totally scot-free, it doesn't feel good, right? In that clip you played, we're often talking about things that happened, that evidence that is already out in the open. And if that cannot be converted into some sort of criminal accountability, it certainly wouldn't sit right.
Yeah, the evidence is out there. Dan, Bess, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
You can find Bess and Dan's work at vanityfair.com. This episode of Inside the Hive was produced by Michael May. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. We had engineering assistance today from James Yost and mixing by Bob Mallory. And I'm Brian Stelter. You can find me on Twitter and Threads at Brian Stelter or reach out to me directly, bstelter@gmail.com. I love hearing from you about the show and I love hearing your ideas for future guests. We'll be back in your podcast feed next week.
And if you are watching this video, either I'm dead or I'm in a very, very, very bad situation.
She said, oh my God, I can hear gunshots. I can hear men outside.
Where are they? What have they done to them? Are they dead? Are they not dead?
There is one suspect, her father, the Sheikh.
It's Madeline Barron from In the Dark. We've teamed up with our new colleague, Heidi Blake, at The New Yorker to try to answer a question about one of the richest men in the world, the ruler of Dubai.
Why do the women in Sheikh Mohammed's family keep trying to run away?
There's 5 policemen outside and 2 policewomen inside the house. So basically I'm a hostage.
And he reminded me that Sheikh Mohammed can get me anywhere.
Because you're a rich and powerful person, you can effectively break any law you want in our country and get away with it.
The Runaway Princesses is available now. Follow In the Dark wherever you get your podcasts.